Hello, this is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
And I'm a bit echoey today, I'm afraid. I'm in the bedroom today. In the boudoir.
Surely you've put old egg boxes.
Yeah.
All around the walls. Does that actually work? I guess it must work.
Well, it does. Well, you know, ask our friend Chris Pacey, the acoustical engineer. I'm sure it does.
Get him on the line.
We need some baffles. Someone get some baffles in here.
I did see, I meant to forward it to you actually, Lewis. There was a very amusing Onion article which said, the headline was something like, "Podcaster makes heartfelt promise to improve sound quality for his next episode," which made me laugh, because I certainly remember us always talking about that at the beginning, just saying, oh yeah, no, next, we're looking into it. Then we've just given up.
Yeah, we've kind of reached an acceptable level of shitness.
Exactly, that's the best description. An acceptable level of shitness. So how are you?
I'm good. Struggling to watch films these days. Although I did manage to watch Avengers Age of Ultron the other day.
Oh, right, okay.
I think as a new parent, I can only watch, as Alex said, silly films. that's about all I can manage in terms of brain capacity.
How did you find it?
I actually thought it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be, because I'd heard mixed reviews about it, so I kind of went in with low expectations. But actually, I thought it did a pretty good job of like giving all the characters a kind of decent kind of storyline and trying to keep it all together. You know,
I think you're right. I just don't think it did as good a job as the first Avengers film about kind of keeping all the plates spinning. Whereas this one, I think it wasn't actually the fault of Joss Whedon, but that whole thing about Thor going into that bath, I didn't really understand what that was all about. It seemed a bit, do you remember that bit?
Yeah.
It really seemed to link into the rest. He was like, I've got to find out what's going on. But obviously that's something setting up for his film.
Exactly.
It just seemed a bit silly to do that.
It was a bit confusing. But I think that you've highlighted the key problem there, is the fact that there's about six films or something setting up this film. And there's going to be another six films or something after it that tie into it. And suddenly it's like, well, it's got exactly the same problem that the Marvel comic books do, that it's just so hard to maintain the continuity and to try and, you know, reference everything that is happening without making it a confusing mess.
Especially as it's not just like they're making one film with the character in, they're doing three or four films with each of these characters in.
Exactly.
It just becomes very unwieldy. I think you're right there. I think the thing about the first Avengers film was it felt like the culmination of the other films. Mm. Whereas the second one doesn't feel like the culmination. It feels just like another Marvel film.
Yeah.
And I think it lost that specialness for that reason. By trying to set up stuff for other films, especially other films that aren't Avengers films, just other films with those characters in, I think it shot itself in the foot, really. I think the Avengers film should be like the big highlight.
Yeah, no,
but
I get that.
It made money.
It definitely made money. Although not as much as the first one, apparently.
Still, for me, I don't think after the last podcast where I was showing off about all the films I've seen, I don't think I've actually watched any films since that one. Other than the subject of today's. I saw The Martian in the cinema.
Oh, I saw The Martian too.
I think we both enjoyed it, didn't we?
Not The Martian 2, The Martian. Okay.
He's up there again. He's stuck.
How can the same shit happen to the same guy twice? He's Dutch in the second one.
This time Batman comes to save him because of the Ben Affleck Matt Damon connection.
It's the DC multiverse. Actually, there is a character called The Martian in
there
the
is,
DC
exactly.
multiverse.
There you go. They've set all up. It's perfect. So, this week, though, our film for this month, or this week.
Yeah, so this week is my pick. We're doing All About My Mother, or Todo Sobre Al Madre, I think it is, in Spanish, which is filmed by Pedro Almodovar, came out in 1999. and it won best foreign language film at the Academy Awards. And it's one of my favourite films. I've watched it years and years ago.
Now, did you see this? Because obviously 1999 was the year you were in Barcelona, wasn't it? Or was it 2000?
Yes.
I can't quite remember now.
No, it was 2000, but it was January 2000. So I kind of...
right, yeah.
I went, and the film's set mostly in Barcelona. And,
yes.
So it's kind of contemporary for me when I was living there. But I actually didn't see it until I got back from Barcelona.
Right. But I guess there's a strong sense of nostalgia when you saw it. Because did you see it relatively soon after you got back?
Yeah, I think it was relatively soon after. And certainly, like, a lot of the shots in the apartments, I was like, God, my apartment was just like that, you know.
Yeah.
Like I recognised all of the very distinctive kind of Barcelona architecture and the apartment doors with the weird grills in, you know. It's just kind of, it was kind of weird kind of watching it afterwards.
Yeah, I bet. We'll come back to that later, because I kind of want to talk about how those films of the 1990s now feel quite old, or they look like period pieces now. But anyway, so what, you tell me, what's it about?
So it's about a group of women, essentially, who, the plot centres around a woman called Manuela, who her son dies right at the beginning of the film, and it's in her grief she kind of decides to go and tell the father, who doesn't even know he has a son. But the plot mixes in with an actress who plays Blanche DuBois in a version of Streetcar Named Desire, and also with a young nun called Rosa, who ends up getting pregnant. And it's basically about those three characters, and also Abrigado, I think her name is. It's a transvestite prostitute, and those between those four characters, there's just all sorts of intertwining kind of plot lines between them, and it's just all about how they're resolved, centering around Manuela and her quest to find Lola, the father of the son.
Hmm.
It's extremely melodramatic. It's highly melodramatic.
Yes, yes, that's what it was actually. The thing that struck me about it more than anything was, the characters don't really talk like real people. They talk like characters. Yeah. Like they're on, like a fiat. They're on. It, you know, it's interesting that the Streetcar Named Desire. You see the scenes of the actual play within the film, mm-hmm. and it did feel like a theatrical piece.
Yeah,
it wasn't a kind of kitchen sink slice of real life drama. It was slightly heightened, but not in a, I don't know, Guy Ritchie way. Yeah, they weren't caricatures, but I think it was theatrical is probably the best way to describe it. You know, characters spoke in a slightly over the top theatrical way.
Well, the way I remember when I first watched it, it really came across as like a soap opera, but not kind of an EastEnders style soap opera, more like an American soap opera where people just kind of come in and go, "I'm your father," or like, you know, it's a really over the top kind of plot.
Well,
in
probably.
Sense.
More like a kind of South American soap opera, which are quite popular in Spain and Portugal, because the characters mention Argentina several times in the film.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the main characters from Argentina. Yeah.
So I did think, I wondered if that was a conscious connection with that kind of.
But even though it's kind of really melodramatic like that, I think the characters are just so genuine. They come across as really, really genuine, and really, I found myself warming to them all the way through. And there's a real kind of sense of humour about it, but also a real sense of pathos. It's kind of, it could have been cheap, but it isn't cheap, you know, because it's just so, there's just something about it. Like there's just so many little great lines, and I found myself really caring for the characters and being devastated when all these kind of things happen to them that through no fault of their own. It also was like, I think it came at a time in my life when I think I was just finished university, or was at university, and, you know, it was exciting, you know, looking into seeing all the different possibilities that life had to offer, and then kind of seeing a film where it's essentially just all of the people are completely alternative in some way or another. There's a pregnant nun, there's a woman who had a baby with a transvestite, you know, there's a transvestite who was a truck driver and became a prostitute, you know, there's an aging actress who's having a lesbian relationship with a kind of co-star, you know, it's all kind of really big, larger than life kind of crazy people, but they're not played for laughs.
No,
they're genuine people.
It's not, I suppose, what yeah, it's not an issues film. You know, like you describing that sounds like the whole film is going to be about the fact that those characters are, you know, have that sexual preference or whatever. But that's just a side part of that. It's a part of their character, but not in any way the focus of what the film is about.
Yeah.
It's almost just treated as, yeah, the fact that Lola is the, you know, the transvestite or transsexual, I suppose, who is the father of the child. The fact that she's a transsexual isn't actually, it's not really an important part of the film. It's not really referenced that often. You know, what I found was quite interesting was just, it was just unaccepted. It's almost like, it was just like, oh, and he was always, you know, oh, your father was a police officer, or your father was a banker. It just seemed, it was just an incidental part of the person he was, rather than the defining part of who he was.
It's interesting, yeah, exactly. Like, no one really comments on it, you know. No one, you know, the fact that he, you know, acts, or she, sorry, she, I should get it right here.
Yeah.
So she kind of, like, chooses to be a woman, but, you know, he's still biologically a man. It's kind of, and then has fathered a child. You know, it's never really remarked upon by any other characters, except right near the end when it's the slightly uptight mother, right at the end, who kind of expresses shock and kind of really distaste. But then she's also the character you sympathise with least. So it's kind of.
But not only that, she has sort of got a. I mean, it is the fact. It's not so much that Lola. It's not because Lola is a transsexual. It's more because Lola got her daughter pregnant, and completely changed her life. That's what she's more upset by, or in that, you're right. She's not a particularly sympathetic character. Although interesting, they do mention later, right towards the end of the film, like they sort of say something like, "Oh, the mother's so different now." Yeah, there's only really one sequence really where they kind of really talk about the fact that, I suppose, the objectification of a transsexual person, which is. When an actor comes onto a grado, that's the only kind of thing where it's really, I suppose, they're kind of being objectified as, as other or as a sexual thing.
Yeah, exactly, and that's why, you know, how you say it's not really an issues film. It's not really about the difficulty of being transgender. It's kind of more focused on just the interactions between these characters and how they overcome the tragedies that beset them.
Yeah, I think it's, you're right. It's not about them overcoming the people they are. It's more just overcoming the mistakes they've made in their lives, which is completely separate to their sexual orientation or gender. It's just the fact that, as all people do, they make mistakes and they cock things up, and then there are repercussions to that.
And also there's kind of a real running theme about family and how there's a lovely scene in the middle where they all kind of come together, and it's like it feels like a family, even though they're essentially all just friends or have weird kind of different relationships. But then the actual real families, you know, are all dysfunctional, you know, they're not real. It's like the family is through the friendship rather than through actual family ties. Certainly Rose's mother is kind of portrayed as almost selfish. You know, she's not really, doesn't really give Rosa much attention, you know, whereas she gets that from the other characters, you know, as her mother, you know. It's all about acting and that. Actually, speaking of the themes of the film, a lot of it is centred around A Streetcar Named Desire and All About Eve, which neither of which I'd seen the first time I watched the film. So that's a lot of it kind of passed me by. But now watching the film again, you know, I've seen both of them, and you can see the parallels between in the plot and how they portray it. And, you know, particularly All About Eve is a film about, you know, a strong woman and who's very much like Huma in the film. And The Streetcar Named Desire is about essentially women being manipulated by men. You know, and both of those themes kind of crop up in the movie. And actually some scenes are just played almost exactly the same. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And also, I suppose, in Streetcar Named Desire, Blanche is fleeing her old life, which is similar to
Manuela.
And, yeah, as we find out in Streetcar Named Desire, it's due to something that happened with a young guy, which is, I know, quite different to Mandela, but it is Manuela, but it's the same, similar thing. Now, I'm similar to you, because I only saw Streetcar Named Desire about 18 months ago, and it's quite interesting just how much popular culture has now made more sense because I've seen that film. Like when the, what's the Woody Allen film that came out?
Oh, which is all about Blue Jasmine.
Blue Jasmine, which is essentially just a remake of Streetcar Named Desire, which confusingly, though, not many people mentioned at the time. But it is almost a straight remake of the. Yeah, yeah, it's essentially taking the story and updating it. And even that the Simpsons episode where Marge plays Blanche in the in the music Streetcar Named Desire, the musical version.
Yeah, suddenly it all makes sense now. Yeah. Yeah, that film's really, originally it was a play, but they've influenced so much in popular culture. Yeah. It's funny, like, when you suddenly get tapped into, is that when we watched The Warriors? And then we've seen references to The Warriors everywhere. It's like, God, that makes sense now.
It's funny, isn't it? Now, it's interesting, because I found this, I thought this was a good film, but it's a film I didn't particularly warm to.
Oh, interesting.
It's a film I could objectively see as interesting, well acted, well shot, but I found a slight distance to it all, and I think that partly came down to, in part anyway, the theatricality of the characters, the fact that everyone spoke dialogue, they didn't speak as people speak. That's what it felt. Everyone spoke as if the dialogue had been written for them, which I know is the case for everything. But you know what I mean? Like, it really felt like I couldn't quite switch my brain off. The bit of my brain that was saying, these are just actors in a film, that didn't quite switch off.
That's kind of the point, though, isn't it? Like, and in fact, at the end of the film, it's dedicated to all the actors and those
who
act as mothers. And so part of it is the fact that we're all just acting in our lives. You know?
Yeah, quite true. But I think you're probably right there. But that sadly doesn't change the fact that I didn't really like it for that reason. So yeah, it was an interesting one. It's not like I disliked it or I'm saying, oh, this is rubbish, because I could see it was a good film. It just wasn't, I suppose, essentially my cup of tea. But I did wonder, actually, because, knowing that it was released in 1999, and I did think, I wonder if Lewis did see this just after he got IRAP in Barcelona or just after Barcelona, and you have that kind of emotional connection.
Definitely. Well, I think I got a lot out of the film in terms of, like, saying, oh, I used to live just there,
Yeah, of course,
Although I didn't couldn't really pick out exact streets and things.
No,
the film.
It's not a tourist approach to Barcelona. Bits of Barcelona are shown are quite nondescript.
Yeah, they go past the Sagrada Familia at one point, but that's about it.
Yeah.
But then it did kind of make me feel a bit of pang of homesickness.
Did you recognise the car park with all the prostitutes, or?
Do you know? It looks. I know. I can guess where that would be shot.
I bet you can.
Because there's a flea market that's just on the edge of town that's kind of in a similar looking area. That's
right.
Essentially, all the tramps just sell the stuff that they found on the streets. It's just really weird, and you kind of so it's kind of in a similar kind of abandoned waste ground kind of area. And I wonder if that was actually where it was.
Quite possibly. So,
I remember going there. That was very strange, a very strange kind of place.
But I did think, though, actually watching it now, does this frighten you at all, that this thing, which was something you did when you're 20 years old, you're in Barcelona at that time, and now it looks really old. The film itself, the what people are wearing, the kind of the look of the film, the quality of the film, the sheen of the film, make it look like a period piece. It doesn't look at all, it doesn't feel at all like a modern thing. It feels like an old-fashioned thing. I suppose it is almost 20 years old. But isn't that strange that something we watched when we were adults is now
to be honest, I didn't really feel that. Perhaps because it was just watching something. Because
you've seen it before, Brad. Because I came to it fresh, maybe. Yeah. I'm seeing it through just completely. Because I had no idea at all what the film was going to be about. I went into completely blind. So when it came up, I was like, oh, it looks about. And then I looked about. I was like, oh, okay, it must be set contemporary. But I was like, wow, it does look old.
I didn't really get that so much. Perhaps because it kind of chimed well with actually what I remember it being like an, I don't really
think of that as old.
I don't really think of that as old, and also yeah. I kind of don't live in Barcelona anymore, so I kind of can't compare it to anything. But then also, but then having said that, I was watching Friends the other day.
Yeah.
Like, I hadn't seen an episode of Friends in years and years and years, and then just sat down to watch one, and I was like, oh my God, this looks so dated now. Like,
yeah.
All the clothes they're wearing, it's like, you know, it really kind of made me think, God, this is a long time ago.
When you think in Barcelona in 99, the Olympics had only been 7 years before that.
Yeah, 92, wasn't it?
Yeah, which that seems, that which, yeah, that was like the renaissance of Barcelona, wasn't it? That was turning Barcelona to a modern European city, a tourist destination.
Freddie Mercury did the song.
Exactly. That put it on the map. And that really, that kind of made it suddenly, you know, put it back into the pantheon, I guess, of modern European cosmopolitan cities. And that was only 7 years before. That seems so strange, you know, when you think now, 92 feels like an absolute lifetime ago.
Yeah, it is. You know, this.
it actually is.
For some people, it actually is.
Well, someone born in 1992 would be older than the age you were when you went to Barcelona.
Speaking of getting old, one thing else that was different whilst watching this film was now I've got a kid of my own, and I know you've got one on the way, and it kind of really affected me much more because you know, there's bit, well, the first bit is where her son dies, and you just, I was just like that. Whereas that kind of was sad the first time I watched it. This time I was watching it, I was like, oh God, it's like I've been kicked in the gut, because I could recognise that feeling and how devastating.
You see, I had a slightly different takeaway from that whole sequence. I actually thought, God, this feels like an episode of Casualty, because like, it was obvious that something's going to happen to him. And then, you know, at one point he gets almost run down. Just like, oh, be careful. And you know, because the whole thing about the organ donation beforehand, it's clear that something's going to happen to him. He's probably going to die.
God.
And that almost certainly that whole sequence where she's pretending to have to give up her son's organs is going to be acted out for real or anything. And then so, like, he always gets run down. I was like, oh, God, like, just let it just happen. Yeah.
It's heavily foreshadowed. Let's put it that indeed, way. Yeah. It's heavily foreshadowed. But, you know, I knew it was coming, and it's still kind of...
But no, you're right. I know what you mean. Yeah, certainly those elements of fatherhood and...
It's like watching horror films, though. I can't watch a horror film the same way I did when I was 18, because life just means too much now, you know.
Yeah, you realise quite how delicate you are, and quite how easy it would be for you, to die. It would be so, doesn't take much.
Exactly. When you think, when you're 18, you just think you're immortal. Whereas now we're just crumbly, bitter old men.
Exactly.
We're on the brink, essentially.
Well, I'm glad it's a film that, you know, that it's obviously still giving you, giving you something new each time you watch it, which is the mark of obviously a favourite film.
Exactly. I was gripped watching it again, and it's melodramatic, but it gets me. It still gets me, you know. And I still think it's kind of, and it. One other thing we should mention as well is that it passes the Bechdel test with flying cars.
Oh yeah, definitely. This, although. Characters do talk about Lola a lot. I suppose technically it was a character who was once a man. So Bechdel test. Perhaps we need to look more into the Bechdel test. What subclauses there were about that? Is it?
If anyone doesn't know what the Bechdel test is, it's a film. To pass the Bechdel test, a film has to have two female characters talking about another character who's female.
Yeah, or just talking about something that isn't about a male character.
Talking about something that isn't man. So I think, that's pretty much the entire film.
Yeah,
except
definitely true.
Lola, possibly, depending on how strict you are with your definitions.
As I say, a good film. And I can see why it suddenly launched Penelope Cruz's career in American and English-speaking cinema. Because she is, one, she's very good in this, and two, she is, like, stunningly beautiful in this film.
I think she's got cute down to her teeth. She essentially has eyes the size of saucers.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
You know, and she's essentially playing a little girl lost, really, who's desperate for her mother.
When did Vanilla Sky come out? Was that 2003, 2002?
No, I think that was a bit later. But I mean, really? that was a remake of the Spanish film.
Yeah, I know it was a remake, but really, was it?
And she was, and Penelope Cruz was in both films.
Yes, yeah, I know. But that Vanilla Sky was the first time I remember seeing Penelope Cruz in a English speaking film. But,
I'm sure she'd been in stuff before that.
I'm sure she had, but you know, I don't see that many films. I think
I can't think what now, but yeah, she's definitely. Yeah. Well, she's done all right, hasn't she?
She's done fine. She's done absolutely fine.
I mean, you know, the highlight of the career has been the Nintendo adverts where she dresses up as Mario. That's as far as I'm concerned.
Really? I don't think I've seen those adverts. Is that a thing, or did you just dream
that? No, that is actually a thing. It's just kind of like, this is weird.
someone delved into the darker recesses of your subconscious and produced.
Exactly. My two favourite things, Penelope Cruz and Mario, together at last.
Does she have the moustache?
She does have the moustache.
Who plays Luigi?
Her sister.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. I'm not even making that up. That is actually what happened.
How about Princess Peach?
I don't know, you're just going too far now. Showing too far into the recesses of my sick mind.
I suppose, you could be Princess Peach in this way, and then she has to...
Well, sometimes I am, sometimes I'm Bowser.
It all depends how the game... Well, anyway, I don't know, let's perhaps cut that.
Let's just stop. Let's just move on.
I think we've pretty much said all we need to say, unless there's anything else you want to say.
No, I think that's it. I think, I think it's a brilliant film. I mean, obviously I would recommend this film. Would you recommend this film?
I think I would, yeah. Yeah, I would, because it is a good film. It's just not my cup of tea, I guess. But that's not to say that... certainly my wife enjoyed it, and obviously you really enjoy it. I can completely see why you would enjoy it. It's not like I'm like, what do people see in this? Like, oh yeah, I can totally see why people like this. Just not for me, I think.
Oh, well,
not for me right now.
On that slightly down note, we should probably finish. Just another 3 out of 5 from Ian.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, you're
the
wrong.
Kind of classic movies. Games, I should mention videos. Though, if you like this sort of thing, you'll love this.
Exactly. I should mention though that Almodovar has done some amazingly. When we were choosing films, because I wanted to do an Almodovar film for the podcast, and in the end, I settled on this one because I think it's probably my favourite. But equally, Talk to Her and The Skin I Live In. Either of those, I probably would have switched in for this one because they're both equally brilliant.
The Skin I Live In, what's that about? Is that
someone with Antonio Banderas and a plot that I really can't spoil because
But I do. I remember that coming out. It's very, very striking imagery and ads for it.
It's brilliant.
Perhaps brilliant. I'd like that one more. Perhaps I should check that one out because this was, as I say, a very well made film. But
I think it's. I can't recommend The Skin I Live In enough. It's brilliant. It's a bit... there'll be a bit in it where you just turn and just go, what? Because I literally did that when I was watching it. I was like, what?
Great. Well, I shall check it out.
Beastie Boys style.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. All right. If you've got any films for us to watch, then please write to us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
And... please like our Facebook page, 101 Films, and follow us on Twitter, 101 Films.
And take a look at our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com. And that's it.
That's it, yes.
Hopefully be back before Christmas.
Before Christmas.
I'm not going to promise anything. We may or may not come back. Who knows?
We'll try and do a Christmas special, if nothing else.
Definitely.
A seasonal cheer. All right, then. Bye.
All right, bye.
The only thing I can really remember is the big island in the sky at the end.